go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for the fourth segment in this very special hour-long interview with Rahim Kassam, a brilliant, articulate, and very courageous pundit, journalist, analyst, commentator, but the author, most importantly at the moment, of No-Go Zones, about how Sharia law is coming to a neighborhood near you. And Rahim, we've been talking now about the fact, and it is a fact, despite some of the efforts to dissemble about this, it is a fact that there are now enclaves that meet your definition across much of at least what Don Rumsfeld used to call old Europe. They're resisting it rather better in new Europe. But talk about what goes on in these enclaves that you've observed firsthand, specifically not just how they treat the outsiders who are not welcome, but how they're treating the people, how the domination of that Muslim population is proceeding, and whether it is contributing to the cultivation of Sharia and jihad.
I feel like we often ignore this point, that these neighborhoods are usually very deprived neighborhoods economically, that these places spring up in. And this is a failure of politics and economics and the local politicians, but it's also intentional. These areas tend to be controlled at a political level by socialist, or indeed, as you know, we still have in Europe, communist political parties. And I don't mean communist like, you know, Hillary Clinton's a communist. I mean real communist political parties. And it serves their interests through their sort of welfaristic policies to keep these people in poverty. But what it means when these people are kept in poverty is that crime rises, is that morality finds itself, in question, because people see they have to act and behave a certain way just to survive. And so when you have a population that is already deprived of what they feel like they need, then Sharia and Islam becomes incredibly attractive to them, because it promises things to them that the state and the local governments simply don't. It promises them a belief system from the outset that they can believe in, but it also promises them a place to go to work, a place to go to eat, a place to go to fraternize. And these are where the mosques and the community centers you see popping up all over the place start playing into it. And the groups like Tablighi Jamaat and the groups like the Muslim Brotherhood organizations, they know this inside out. If they can take a dependent population and make them dependent on them, that is the first step in the path to radicalization. When you look at Saeed Farouk in San Bernardino, he was eating at the mosque. He was being instructed on which side of his body to sleep to be an adherent with how the Prophet Muhammad lived his life. So, for instance, you have in the north of England very high, you know, concentration Muslim majority areas like in Dewsbury. And what are you seeing? You're seeing criminality of the most heinous sort manifest itself. You're seeing these grooming gangs, these Muslim grooming gangs, getting young white girls hooked on drugs and then, you know, raping them, passing them around between, you know, these groups of men, to the point where I'm not talking about it's happened to five people. We are talking in the high thousands now, 1,400 in a place called Rotherham alone over the last decade, young white girls predominantly that have been targeted and set upon by these groups.
Rahim, I spoke earlier in the week with John Gaunt, who I'm sure you know from the UK. And he was describing this problem, and in particular, going back to what we talked about at the very start, the willful blindness of the authorities to what these grooming gangs were doing. They knew about them. They tolerated them. They, in effect, enabled them as well. Is that right?
100% correct. There were groups, and unfortunately, the groups had some unpalatable political bents to them. For instance, the English Defence League, which highlighted this issue, but because it was coming from the English Defence League, the politicians found a way to ignore it even more. And they found a way to ignore it. But even now, when we know it, when there are criminal convictions taking place right now, and you're seeing masses, scores and scores of men being locked up for what they did. Even now, the politicians are still saying, well, we shouldn't call these Muslim grooming gangs because it might upset the wider Muslim population. Well, I'll tell you what, if I was not an apostate, if I was still within the Muslim population, I would be more upset with the fact that this was going on in my own faith and in my own community than I would be people talking about it openly and honestly. The BBC calls them Asian grooming gangs.
Is that right? So as not to give offense to Asians, I guess. Let me ask you, we've touched on two topics that are really important, and I think our audience is aware of the work we've at the Centers for Security Policy be doing, but I do want to just mention it in the context of your points, Rahim. One is on this collaboration between the Sharia supremacists and the leftists, despite their very profound differences about certain things, of course, apparently to accomplish their shared purpose, which is taking down the West. You've also mentioned several times this group, Tablighi Jamaat, and I know you know how incredibly important this is to the jihadist enterprise in the world. Most of us have never heard the name of the group. Alana Friedman has done a terrific little monograph for us called Tablighi Jamaat, Gateway to Jihad, which I commend to all of us, all of you in our listening audience who are interested in learning more about this group. Rahim Qassam has described for us so effectively. So, Rahim, just very quickly wrapping up this bit, because I want to move to the prospect that we're going to find more and more of these same sorts of enclaves in the United States. How has the fact that these organizations, these enclaves, these communities, whatever you want to call them, these no-go zones are operating, really mutated the societies in which they exist? We've talked about the authorities not going in them. We've talked about them looking the other way at some of their behavior. But is it having an even more dangerous effect? Some have talked about the prospect of civil war breaking out as a result of these breakaway enclaves.
Yeah, well, of course, and you have Theresa May, our current Prime Minister in the United Kingdom, who is on the record as having said that Sharia can be good for Britain. Now, I don't know what parts of Sharia she was talking about, but you will be aware of the fact that we have Sharia courts, or Sharia councils, if you like, operating freely in the United Kingdom, mediating differences, what's supposed to be inter-community differences, divorces, business dealings, but it's actually now going outward into the non-Muslim community. In my book, you will find the testimony from one person who is not a Muslim but operates in a predominantly Muslim area in the United Kingdom, who was hauled in front of a Sharia council. Now, luckily for him, the Sharia council found in his favor in that regard, but they are using their laws they are creating dual track legal systems in the United Kingdom. This is happening all over the place. If you go to any mainstream food chain now in downtown Paris, in central London, you will find that the meat supply is usually a halal meat supply. Now, people often ask, oh, but what's the difference between halal as a slaughter method and shahita as a slaughter method? Go to the abattoirs and see it for yourself. The conditions in the halal abattoirs are absolutely filthy, completely disgusting. And what we also know is that the funding stream for halal certification, which is what people have to get to be called halal, is incredibly opaque. People don't really know where this money is going, but we can look at evidence. For instance, the Lashish chain of restaurants in the Michigan area here in the United States, whereby the owner was funneling money from his halal chain to Hezbollah.
And as John Gaughan pointed out, there's also the question of the inhumane nature of the slaughter that would be offensive to most people. But just the idea that these meat products are consecrated to Allah is something that I think most of us of other faiths would find very troubling indeed. Rahim, let me turn now in our last segment to what is coming to the United States, not just what is afflicting Europe. We'll talk about that and more with Rahim Qassam, the author of No-Go Zones, right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.